This is the podcast of Vermont Edition, a production of Vermont Public Radio. The program and this podcast are made possible by the financial support of our listeners.
Boppers every day are their friends and their family. There is an element of VPR is my community, it's my home, it's the people I hang out with every day.
Carrie is right. VPR is a community for so many people. And when you become a member, you show how important that community is. Good morning, I'm Tim Johnson, asking you to call 1-800-639-6391 to make a pledge, because you value programs like On Point, programs that have become a reliable resource that you depend on to put important news and events into context. Maybe you're just tuning in to get the latest Eye on the Sky weather report, or perhaps you're a regular listener to Vermont Edition with Jane Lindholm. You're tuning in because you value these programs. They're an important part of your life, where you return time and time again to stay connected. Please help us and the whole VPR community by calling 1-800-639-6391 to keep this service coming. Or you can go to vpr.net and make a secure pledge online. VPR is a constant companion. We're here 24/7, a solid, reliable source for news, information, and music. Every day, it's an incredible lineup of programs. The BBC, Morning Edition, On Point, Vermont Edition, Fresh Air, All Things Considered, the list goes on and on. Think about how much time you spend enriching your life with VPR. Because these programs are such an important part of your life, because they are a constant source of credible information, it's important to become a part of the VPR family and call 1-800-639-6391 and make a pledge. That number again is 1-800-639-6391, or go to vpr.net and make a secure pledge online. And thanks.
Progressive Party candidate Richard Kemp is best known for his work as an advocate for affordable housing. Now Kemp has turned his sights on the lieutenant governor's race. Today on Vermont Edition, we continue our series of one-on-one interviews with the state's top candidates. We'll learn why Richard Kemp is running and what issues matter most to him. Also, tracing Norwich University's long history of accepting international students and learning to make cider in Middlebury. The news is next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The stock market is falling again today. The Dow Jones Industrials are down 324 points amid ongoing investor worries over the U.S. economy. NPR's Dina Temple-Raston reports.
Investors didn't have to go very far to get their worst fears about the economy confirmed. The bad news was everywhere. J.P. Morgan Chase reported a staggering 84% decline in third-quarter profits. Pepsi announced yesterday that its sales were way down. The Commerce Department released September retail sales figures. They registered the biggest drop in 3 years. Consumers are clearly hunkering down. Analysts say that instead of going out to buy things, consumers are raiding their pantries. And that's going to start showing up in the economy. The Dow's declines over the past 2 days have erased nearly half of the gains it made on Monday, when the market rallied some 900 points. Then, investors were focused on the financial bailout plan. Now, investors are bracing for the fallout. Dina Temple-Raston, NPR News, New York.
Mr. Bush discussed the federal government's plan to buy shares in several major U.S. banks, but the president tried to reassure investors who don't like massive government intervention in the free market. He says the government won't be making decisions at these financial institutions.
These banks will be privately controlled. That was the liquidity measures being taken. Are structured such that the government will be a passive investor. In other words, there won't be government officials sitting on the boards of private companies.
Mr. Bush repeats his administration is intending to shore up free enterprise, not replace it. The White House says Vice President Dick Cheney has experienced an abnormal heart rhythm. Cheney is scheduled to visit the hospital today for a procedure to restore the normal rhythm. Cheney currently wears a pacemaker. Hurricane Omar is strengthening and threatening the Caribbean, including the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico. From member station WLRN, Shannon Novak reports.
Omar is a Category 1 hurricane with sustained winds of 85 miles per hour with higher gusts. It's forecast to move between Puerto Rico's main island and the U.S. Virgin Islands tonight or Thursday morning. Hurricane warnings are in effect for the Puerto Rican islands Vieques and Culebra, the U.S. and British Virgin Islands, St. Kitts and Nieves, St. Martin, and the islands of Ceiba, St. Eustatius, St. Barthélemy, and Anguilla. The entire mainland of Puerto Rico is under a hurricane watch. Antigua, Barbuda, and Montserrat are also under watches. Omar is forecast to increase in speed and intensity. A hurricane warning may be posted for the main island of Puerto Rico later today. For NPR News, I'm Shannon Novak in Miami.
On Wall Street, the Dow is down now 289 points at 9,021. The NASDAQ is down 53. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from Kauffman, the foundation of entrepreneurship, committed to expanding human welfare through economic growth, on the web at kauffman.org.
You're listening to Vermont Edition. In a couple of minutes, we'll be talking with Lieutenant Governor candidate Richard Kemp. First, regional news.
From the studios of Vermont Public Radio, this is VPR News. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. A restaurant in downtown Barrie was badly damaged by fire this morning. Crews are still at the scene on Depot Square where the all-fired-up restaurant caught fire. There have been no reports of injuries, but flames and smoke poured out of the building. Traffic has continued to flow on nearby Main Street, but access to Depot Square has been blocked. Advocates say the state should spend more money on child care subsidies to help parents who have to work. A variety of groups are involved in a campaign this week to raise the profile of child care during the election campaign. They say eligibility for the child care subsidies is based on 1999 federal poverty guidelines. The Department of Children and Families say that starting in January, the eligibility will be based instead on 2000 poverty guidelines. But Commissioner Steve Dale says it would cost the state $16 million to bring the eligibility system completely up to date.
This is a tough one. To me, it's the most critical issue here because there are folks who absolutely need assistance, particularly to be able to go to work, who need the extra assistance to pay for childcare, which is probably their single greatest expense, particularly if you have more than one child.
Dale says the state has taken a different approach to help make childcare affordable and to promote quality. He says the state pays higher subsidies for children enrolled in centers that meet quality standards.
We have made some substantial progress in that arena over the last few years. And the good news about the quality standards is, number one, it means higher quality for kids. And number two, when you meet the higher quality standards, you get paid a rate differential so that your rate is higher and begins to be more competitive.
Dale says state agencies will begin to prepare their budgets in the next few weeks, so he doesn't know whether more money will be requested for child care subsidies. But he does say the state faces cutbacks, so he's not optimistic about making the kind of progress advocates would like. The Vermont Historical Society says a new set of Civil War letters has been added to its collections. Letters were written by James Wilson, a Vermont soldier from East Warren. In all, he sent 53 letters to his mother, his sister, and a friend. Historical Society librarian Paul Carnahan says the letters are especially poignant because Wilson's fiancée died a few months after he did.
This one is interesting because it comes from a community that's very small. East Warren has a very compelling story of a fiancée who dies of a broken heart after the death of her intended. So it's a well-written, interesting collection.
The letters describe daily life with Company B of the 13th Vermont Regiment in 1862 and 1863. That's the regiment that gained fame from its service at the Battle of Gettysburg. Wilson died during that battle. His body was returned to Vermont, and he was buried in East Warren. Historians say the Wilson letters add to the understanding of the Vermont troops' service. The letters also shed light on life in a small village in the middle of the 19th century. Carnahan says the story of Wilson and his fiancée has been told in histories of the Civil War, but this is the first time some of his correspondence has been collected. And a federal judge says a group of skiers can join together to sue the Killington Resort over a plan to eliminate what they thought were lifetime ski passes. U.S. District Court Judge William Sessions certified a lawsuit by the pass holders as a class action yesterday. The lawsuit was filed last year by four pass holders after the resort's new owners told them the passes would no longer be honored after this season. For VPR News, I'm Mitch Wertlieb.
And this is Vermont Edition. It's 12:08. Let's see what's headed our way with Chris Bouchard at the Fairbanks Museum in St. Johnsbury.
A cold front moved through the region pretty quickly yesterday evening, and now we've got a little wedge of high pressure around now. Even though we did have a cold front move through, temperatures not that much cooler than they were yesterday. That means highs in the 60s for this afternoon, but don't get used to that. Temperatures will be trending downward over the next couple of days. We're going to see an increased risk of showers late tonight and into tomorrow as a weak area of low pressure moves our way, and then cooler, drier weather for Friday. On to the forecast details for the VPR listening region. Today, partly cloudy north, but mostly sunny to the south. Pleasant with highs in the 60s. Variable winds around 5 miles an hour. Overnight, increasing clouds with a rising chance of showers for New York and the western St. Lawrence Valley after midnight. Lows in the 40s with light south winds. Tomorrow, it'll be cloudy with showers likely, winding down from west to east in the afternoon, followed by some sunny breaks late. Highs from the mid-50s to lower 60s. Southwest winds 5 to 10, turning northwest at 10 to 15 miles an hour. And looking ahead towards tomorrow night, expect clearing and cooler conditions. Lows ranging from 32 to 43 from north to south. Expect northwest winds of 5 to 10 miles an hour to diminish. I'll be back with a comprehensive forecast for you coming up at the end of the hour. I'm meteorologist Chris Bouchard with an eye on the sky.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Vermont's best-known Progressive Party member Anthony Polina isn't running for governor this year on that party's ticket. Since his switch to independent, the top statewide office seeker for the Progressives is now Lieutenant Governor candidate Richard Kemp. This election season, we've heard from three of the other candidates running for that post: incumbent Republican Brian Doobie, Democrat Tom Costello, and Liberty Union candidate Ben Mitchell. And they've brought up a variety of issues.
Low-tax states are gaining population. I had a niece and a nephew. When they graduated from local universities, they chose to go out of state. One of the reasons they did it was cheaper to live in another state with lower energy costs, lower property tax.
And in order to relicense it, we must be assured that in the event that it is relicensed, that there will be a provision to effectively and safely shut it down.
If I had the opportunity to pardon nonviolent drug offenders, it would be anyone who had not had a weapons charge or some sort of assault charge who is serving time for purely drugs or alcohol related.
Today we're going to look at how progressive Richard Kemp fits into the mix of lieutenant governor candidates. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-639-2211 or email us at vermontedition@vpr.net. What issues are important to you in the lieutenant governor's race, and what questions do you have about the Progressive Party in this year's elections? Again, the number is 1-800-639-2211. Richard Kemp, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me be on your program.
Can you tell us why you want the post of lieutenant governor? Why you're running?
Well, the reason I'm running is I retired from IBM a number of years ago after being a manager at Essex Junction. Not in Essex Junction, in Thomas J. Watson Research Center in Westchester, New York. And I moved up here to work at IBM. And my time in retirement has been involved with nonprofit organizations across the state, mostly with the Champlain Housing Trust and Vermont Community Loan Fund and some other organizations that we could probably talk about. And I would like to see those organizations being given advertisement and promise for what they are doing for the state of Vermont.
So in some ways, do you see your candidacy as a way to bring light to the issues of affordable housing, and that's sort of your main platform as lieutenant governor?
Yes. Affordable housing is a very serious issue that we have in the state of Vermont. 63% of the working people in the state of Vermont cannot buy a house. So something needs to change. Something needs to come about that will make housing available to people that have a serious need.
Well, at the tail end of the last legislative session and after a lot of compromise, the legislature passed a housing bill that was signed by the governor, and the bill sought to focus development on urban hubs by lifting Act 250 jurisdiction on large-scale developments in designated city and town centers, and that 20% of the homes in those areas had to be priced at $250,000 or less. Do you think that that bill goes far enough to help solve the problem?
No, it doesn't address the problem of those 63% of the workers in the state of Vermont that can't even buy a house at $200,000. So there needs to come about a really gathering of funds and resources and people to have, I would say, a massive housing program in the state of Vermont, with engaging the nonprofit housing folks, the private sector, and government sector to build some housing.
Can you tell us some of the specifics of what a plan like that would look like?
Only to say that we can bring about affordable housing. Some of that has been done by the Housing and Conservation Board that makes funds available to nonprofit housing organizations, and we need to work as hard as we can to come up with a solution to this problem, and I think we can do it.
How do you think the lieutenant governor fits into that mix? How would you work to make sure that that happens?
Well, I would be in consultation with the governor and telling the governor what I want to do and what I think is important, and if the governor thinks that we ought to be moving in that area, I would make all the efforts I can to bring about people within the state of Vermont to solve this problem of affordable housing.
Now, Richard Kemp, you've lived in Vermont for a long time, but you're best known within Chittenden County. For listeners in other parts of the state who may not be as familiar with you, how would you introduce yourself to them?
I'm a senior citizen. I'm a grandfather and a great-grandfather. I'm a person who's concerned about bringing economic and housing justice to people within the state of Vermont.
If you have other questions for Richard Kemp, our number is 1-800-639-2211, or you can email us at vermontedition@vpr.net. That number again, 1-800-639-2211. Now, Richard Kemp, how did you get involved with the Progressive Party?
Well, I've always been involved with groups that are concerned from a progressive point of view. I was involved with a group in Westchester called the Concerned Democrats. And I just found that people in the state of Vermont who were looking for solutions to solving a problem of working people and working families in the state of Vermont, that the Progressive Party was doing that, and I became a part of that and have been a part of it for a number of years.
As we mentioned earlier, Anthony Polina is not running as a progressive this year. He has been a top vote getter for the progressives in past years. Do you feel the pressure to be the candidate that gets more than 5% of the vote so that the Progressive Party can remain a major party?
Well, I'm not looking for 5%. I'm looking for 51%. I don't feel any pressure. I'm just using this format and using formats of newspapers to tell people about who I am and what I think about, and then let them make a decision.
If the Progressive Party does not get 5% on any races, what do you think that will do to the party?
It means we'll have to work harder.
Not a problem, though.
Not a problem.
All right, let's talk about some of the other issues that are on the table. One of the issues that's come up in many debates in many races this year is the issue of sex offenders. Mm-hmm. And Lieutenant Governor Brian Duby has been very vocal in his support of Jessica's Law, which provides mandatory 25-year minimum sentences for people convicted of child sexual abuse. Do you support a Jessica's Law?
I would support a Jessica's Law because this is a very serious problem that we have in our society. And I would want to look a little further to see what kind of results you get out of keeping people in jail for 25 years. I think treatment and is a very important component of any kind of dealing with people who are in the criminal justice system.
If treatment you think is very important, would you support a system that involves civil confinement where sex offenders are treated in a treatment facility after they've served jail time as well?
I think that would be helpful.
All right. So Vermont currently has a 10-year mandatory minimum sentence. Do you think that there should be, in general, a mandatory minimum, whether it's 25 years, 10 years? Do you think that that is the right way to go if treatment is what you're thinking is the most important?
I think treatment is really the answer because just talking about prison population, the United States of America has the highest per capita rate of people in jail. At the cost that we are incurring about keeping people in jail, we have to come up with some ways of reducing that cost and getting these people back into the society and being productive, taxpaying members of our society.
Does your support of Jessica's Law break with the Progressive Party?
Not that I know about.
I haven't heard other progressives who have come out as strongly in favor as you suggested that you might be.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, do you feel like you have to hew to the party line?
Not really, unless it's, you know, it's way off the mark or something, and then we might want to have some discussions about that.
We are talking today with Richard Kemp, who's running for lieutenant governor on the Progressive Party ticket. If you have questions for him about what he thinks the lieutenant governor should do or about the strength of the Progressive Party in this year's election, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211 or email us at vermontedition@vpr.net.
I'm Marky Reed from Williston, Vermont, and I'm a member of VPR's Producer Circle. Vermont Edition is, I think, one of your more brilliant additions to the lineup because it brings very pertinent local issues right into our listening every single day. I think it's a time of day that most people, if they're in their car, they can be listening, which is nice. And I like the mix of the call-in with some interviews, with some interesting little stories, the postcards at the end. It's such a lovely portrait of all the little bits and pieces of Vermont, and that it's topical but without being trendy. It's not just chasing a story, but it seems to be relevant to what's happening in the greater community of Vermont. And I have to say, I really love Jane Lindholm. She just has a wonderful spirit about her. She's got a great interviewing voice and presence. You can just feel like she's having fun when she's doing it.
Well, you can tell that Marky Reed is absolutely right about Vermont Edition and Jane Lindholm. It's one of our new programs, but it's quickly become a hallmark of Vermont Public Radio. And another hallmark is the fact that Vermont Public Radio is paid for by the listeners who use this service. I'm Mark Vogelsang. I'm here with our Chief Financial Officer, Brian Donahue. Brian, good reasons for folks to pledge their support for Vermont Edition right now.
Absolutely. It's a great time to pledge right now. You rely upon this. Your support makes it possible. Call 1-800-639-6391. Make that call. Talk to one of our volunteers and make a pledge that fits your budget right now. Also, it's a great time because we're right now, if you pledge, you get into a drawing for a $1,000 gift certificate to North Shire Bookstore.
Yeah, this is tremendous. And it's today only. We'd love to have you participate. If you've already pledged, you're in the drawing. If you haven't yet pledged, do it now. Make that call at 1-800-639-6391 or online at vpr.net. This is a place that you trust. The information, the debates that Vermont Public Radio is hosting, not only on this program, but throughout the weeks and months leading up to the elections locally, nationally, our debates tonight. It's a real good reason to make your support known.
It's such a singular source to tune in, find out about the region, find out about the news. It's consistent. It's there for you. You rely upon it, and we rely upon you. 90% of our funding comes from the local community.
Mm.
So call 1-800-639-6391 and pledge that support.
How about an $8 a month pledge? That'll make you a sustaining member in Vermont Public Radio. And one of the goals that we have during this membership drive is to hear from new members, folks who have never pledged before. So if you're a new listener to Vermont Edition and you haven't yet made that household contribution to Vermont Public Radio, why don't you do it right now? 1-800-639-6391. Putnam Kidder of New London, New Hampshire, thank you for your pledge of support, and he likes Vermont Edition.
Call right now, 1-800-639-6391. Join the others. Join Amy Huntington and Patrick Brown. Pledge your support for the programming that you count on here at Vermont Public Radio.
1-800-639-6391. VPR is funded by listeners like you and by Velco, Vermont Electric Power Company, celebrating over 50 years as Vermont's transmission reliability resource. Moving power, moving forward, Velco.com. And the Vermont Society of CPAs, providing tax, accounting, auditing, consulting, and financial services. Information at findavermontcpa.org. This is VPR, Vermont Public Radio.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're continuing our series of one-on-one interviews with candidates for the state's top office. We're talking with Richard Kemp, who's running for lieutenant governor as a progressive. What issues are important to you in the lieutenant governor's race? How do you think the progressives are doing this campaign season? And what questions do you have for Richard Kemp? Our number is 1-800-639-2211, and our email address is vermontedition@vpr.net. Let's take a call now from Chip in Burlington. Hi, Chip. Go ahead.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for taking my call. This is Chip, and I've known Richard for a decade or so through his work, both for the city and some other nonprofits that he does. And my question to you, Richard, is can you talk about how your energy policy ideas and how that might relate to affordable housing?
Chip, thanks for the call. Go ahead,
That's
Richard
an interesting
Kemp.
Sort of question. Probably the installation of solar panels and maybe some windmills here and there would help to reduce the heating costs and lighting costs for people in affordable housing. My understanding is that solar panels in Germany are widespread, wide use, and they have less sunshine than we do here in Burlington, Vermont.
How would you make solar panels and wind turbines affordable, though? I mean, right now, you can't necessarily get a tax break for putting in solar panels. So for people who, as you say, can't necessarily afford a $200,000 home, how are they going to afford solar panels?
Well, the people that might develop the affordable housing could put the solar panels on the roofs and then sell that power back to the power company, and then reducing the cost of those the power source, power cost for those people in those, and maybe even use it to pay down the mortgage.
Now, wind turbines are another interesting issue. There have been some wind projects that have started development in Vermont. Some of them are having trouble, though, getting traction and actually getting started. Do you support large-scale, medium-scale wind developments in Vermont?
Any effort to reduce our reliance on foreign oil is something I would support. We just can't be under the stranglehold of the producers of oil, and anything we could do to reduce our dependence on that would be helpful.
Another big issue in the campaign this year is, of course, Vermont Yankee. Do you think Vermont Yankee should be relicensed for another 20 years beginning in 2012?
No, I don't think so. Given the there was even some news item in the today's paper. If they can't run and have that place be safe, I don't think it should be relicensed. There's a serious problem here. We've had some meltdowns and some problems. I mean, what happened in the Soviet Union was really devastating. And if we are putting ourselves in that sort of jeopardy, I don't think that's a good use, or we shouldn't allow them to be relicensed when their license expires.
But it's for you, it's only a safety issue. So if the Oversight Committee does find that Vermont Yankee can reliably operate for another 20 years, would you then support the relicensing?
No, I still don't want to support it because the danger that is inherent in a nuclear power plant. I mean, suppose we had sabotage or something, or a terrorist, whatever you want to call it, that would affect us drastically, and I don't think that we should put ourselves in that sort of situation.
The state currently gets about 30% of its power from Vermont Yankee. Where would you suggest we find that baseline power?
Any additional local power dams or solar panels or wind turbines, and also buying additional power from Hydro-Québec.
How do you think, though, that by 2012 we can have that all ready? I mean, that's less than 4 years away.
I think that the people at Hydro-Québec have surplus power that we could buy and make that happen.
Our number again, if you have a question for Richard Kemp, 1-800-639-2211, 1-800-639-2211. What do you think about his energy policy? What do you want to know about his politics, about his background in affordable housing? That number again, 1-800-639-2211. Let's take a call from Ben in Brattleboro. Hi, Ben.
Hi, this is actually Ben Mitchell. I haven't met you yet. I'm the Liberty Union candidate for lieutenant governor, and I want to ask you about how you feel that you have your own show on Vermont Public Radio, whereas I shared a show with Peter Diamondstone last week, and they did it during a time of routine maintenance when we were not on the air with VPR. And how do you feel about having more access to the voters than I have? Do you feel more entitled to having more access? I did get more than 500 signatures to be on the ballot. We are a major party, so you and I are kind of equals in that, right? I like a lot of what you're saying, but do you feel that you deserve more access to the voters than I've received?
Ben Mitchell, the Liberty Union candidate for lieutenant governor. I do want to point out that what Ben Mitchell was talking about was actually emergency maintenance that we had last week while he was on the show, and the damage was repaired in time for him to be on the program. But go ahead, Richard Kemp.
I think any people that control the media should be making all of the candidates' time available so that they can get their message out to the public. And I mean, I think it's important that people know about what candidates are doing and what they're thinking. And people at Public Radio have done that, as far as I can see.
You also actually have your own show. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, that's a program on television.
That's right.
Another media. It's a public access through the public access station in Burlington, Vermont. And it's an interview program, just as we're doing right now. And sometimes there are videos that we put on air. And that's another area that is available to the public to get out whatever message you want to talk about. And I think that's important, and I'm glad that we have it. And I'm glad to have to do my program. I must say that I'm locked out of it until after the election.
Because they don't want to
right.
have you. Yes, yeah. Yes. Let's take another call now from Mika in Hanover, New Hampshire. Mika, do I have it right? Is it Mika or Micah?
It's Mika.
All right,
yeah.
Mika, go ahead.
Hi. I'm wondering if you'd be willing to support starting a Vermont-based credit card to keep the funds and fees that users pay in Vermont instead of Delaware.
That's a great question, and that's something that I would support wholeheartedly. There was a study done by the Peace and Justice Center with Doug Hoffer, one of the people helping with that in a great degree, and called the leaky bucket. And if we could have a credit card that would keep the money in the state of Vermont, I would support that enormously, and I think it's a way that we ought to go.
This is also a suggestion that Anthony Polina has been campaigning for.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about jobs. We're seeing right now unemployment rates at the highest level that they've been in 16 years in Vermont. What would you do to make Vermont a more business-friendly climate and attract jobs during what may well be a recession?
Well, this talk about green industry has gotten my attention, and I think that if we could expand that whole sector of the economy, we could provide jobs for people installing. Again, we talk about solar panels or having people do weatherization. I think there are some weatherization programs that are around. And that would be one area I think we could create some jobs.
How would you do that? Would you provide tax incentives? I mean, what ways would you make those jobs attractive in this state?
Well, I think we'd want to look at that as best we possibly can, and if some tax incentives could be instituted that would reduce the need for electricity or gas or whatever it is, then that would be, I think, in my mind, would be a very beneficial use and a way of providing jobs for people in the state of Vermont.
Richard Kemp, you haven't had statewide office before. You haven't held it. How would you work with the legislature to gain their trust, to make sure that you knew all that was going on in all parts of the state, and to make your office a powerful position?
Well, that would have to be looked at. I would want to be very closely aligned and working with the governor and having him say what he thought was the priorities, and I would try to move in that direction, but also talking about the things that I find that are really of vital interest to the working people and families in the state of Vermont, and that would be housing. And then we would talk about jobs. We would talk about health care. I think we ought to have a single-payer health plan because the amount of people that are jamming into emergency wards is not very helpful. We need to have a health prevention program so to get to take care of people before they get to a state where they have to be hospitalized.
Our number again, 1-800-639-2211. Richard Kemp, progressives have been very vocal in their support of instant runoff voting. Do you support it as well?
I think it's absolutely magnificent. It's if you want to look in terms of dollars and cents, it's a cost reduction because the need for running another election in small towns and stuff could be money that really shouldn't be spent. And it happened in the city of Burlington. We had it, and it happened, and it would happen within a short time frame.
You have actually worked a lot. You spent a lot of time working with the prison population, which is another issue that's come up in this election season. Specifically, you've been mentoring offenders as they were released from jail. Do you think there are enough resources dedicated to offender reentry programs, and can you talk a little bit about your work?
The Offender Reentry Program was a federal project that lasted for 2 years, and we were dealing with offenders before they came out of jail and afterwards, having them get a checking account. We did employment kinds of things. We did housing kinds of things. And I think it was a very effective program because we kept people out of jail. And I have one cocaine addict who's been out of jail and been clean for more than a year. So if it costs, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 to keep somebody in jail, this was a good program, and it should be refunded, and it hasn't been refunded. So we got to look at that and make that happen because the jail population is really out of sight. And one real note about that is, they closed the library at the Chittenden County Jail in South Burlington. They closed the library. That's kind of sad.
When you say the prison population is out of sight, what do you mean? Do you mean in terms of how large the population is, how long sentences are?
I think we are overcrowded. I think we have people who are in jail who could be well be released and either giving a electronic ankle bracelet to hold on to control of where they are, and many of these folks are not. Are nonviolent offenders, and we could have set up a whole network of social workers and counselors and stuff to have these people out of jail and in the community, working and providing for themselves and their families or whatever.
Let's go to Joe in Bridport now. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Hello. You put on very interesting programming these days. I appreciate it. I wanted to go back to the nuclear power issue. I was disappointed that Ben Mitchell didn't bring up the percentage issue on our power from nuclear. On his show the other day, he pointed out that under normal circumstances, considering that we are drawing off the New England grid, nuclear only provides us with about 2% or less than 2% in the total mix. For the total New England grid. And the sensible way to make up for this would be conservation. We could easily go way over the percentages that nuclear power is producing. I mean, it depends upon, what is supplying the grid.
And do you have a question for Richard Kemp on this subject?
I guess it's more of a comment, but I wouldn't mind to have him address it. The other thing is that I think a little deeper analysis is needed on the alternatives. We have alternatives coming along in terms of zero-point energy, drawing. I have an invention on the back burner myself for drawing electricity out of geological faults. This is a very, very huge source of energy in our area along the lake here particularly.
Well, Joe, let's get a response from Richard Kemp about alternative energy. Richard, you had talked about this a moment ago, but what to do without Vermont Yankee. What about conservation? What about funding alternative sources?
Well, yeah, the conservation would really be very helpful, and in some communities around the state of Vermont, that's really happening. I would think that we need to explore all of the possible alternatives to producing energy, dams, hydroelectric kind of power, and make those available and in some way have the state be involved in the development of those alternative energy kinds of things.
Let's take a quick call from Matthew in Marshfield. Matthew, we just have a couple seconds left. What's your question for Richard Kemp?
I just want to make an observation that I feel like he's addressing the governor as a he. I know that Gay Symington is also running, is she not?
She is running, yes. But right now it's Jim Douglas. Yes, go on. Quickly, okay. Please.
All right. Well, I'd really like to get the farmers taken care of. I feel like the farmers are the backbone of the earth here, and we just need to take care of them and bring back the carbon levels to the earth. So if we could just do something for the farmers, that would be excellent.
Matthew, thanks for the call. Richard Kemp, we just have a little bit of time left, but you do have some plans for farm and agriculture in Vermont.
Yes. I mean, the expansion of farmers markets have been absolutely magnificent. They're all over the state. The Burlington School District is including lots of locally grown foods and stuff. Those kind of initiatives could take place across the state, and that would be a great help to the farmers here in the state of Vermont.
Richard Kemp is the Progressive Party candidate for Lieutenant Governor. I want to thank you very much for being on the program today.
Thank you very much, Jane.
We will archive this interview along with all of the other candidate interviews we've been doing on the program. You can go to vpr.net and click on Campaign 2008.
I'm Mark Vogelsang, along with Brian Donahue here at Vermont Public Radio. And we're normally not on the air together, but it's our opportunity to come to you as a listener during Vermont Edition today to say, would you help pay for this important program? Brian, you're chief financial officer. You know that the programs like this cost a lot of money, VPR's investment in regional news.
The investment in regional news has been huge. It's increased by 50% since 2004, and Vermont Public Radio sees how important it is to cover the local news, the regional news, and how it impacts you. And Vermont Edition is one of those examples. You rely upon this programming, and it relies upon you and your financial support to make it possible. So call 1-800-639-6391 and make that pledge of financial support, whatever fits your budget right now.
You know, that's right. Exactly right. A $25 pledge right now would be great. A simple gift of to become a member of Vermont Public Radio. Maybe you can pledge $250. Maybe you want to put it on a credit card. Maybe you want to pay for it one time or on a monthly basis. It's all possible, of course, when you make that call or online pledge at vpr.net. That's secure as well. The important thing is that we hear from you during this membership drive, during this short couple-of-minute break that we're taking during today's program. It's a terrific program, as always, and if you've come to rely on Vermont Edition as your source, make a pledge right now.
Mark, you bring up the idea of that putting it on a credit card or putting it into a check. We have the sustaining membership process. We have well over 3,300 people that choose to support their public radio that way. And what it does is supplies you. You can set the amount. You can set how it comes out, whether it comes out of your savings or checking or credit card. And then VPR is able to count on that consistent resource coming into it to fund all the costs that go into bringing regional news, the travel, the producers, the engineers that bring these elements right to you.
Right. And there's a lot of people behind the scenes. I mean, we all hear Jane. We love the fact that Jane is and Bob Kinzel are on the air. But behind them as hosts, there's a raft of people. You hear them at the end of the program. But they're all working hard in producing, editing, taking phone calls, structuring the program, engineering, mixing the program. And in this case, we're looking for your dollars to help pay for all of these great folks who make this program every day, Vermont Edition.
All right. We need you to do a little work right now. Go to the phone. Call 1-800-639-6391. Many people for Vermont Edition, this is at work listening. I mean, we have the streaming that's on our website at vpr.net. A lot of people tune in because they know this is the one stop during their day that they can get caught up on Vermont, on the issues that are affecting them in their neighborhoods and in their communities. So take that minute, go to vpr.net, make a secure pledge, or call one of our volunteers at 1-800-639-6391.
If you're in Bennington, if you're in Burlington, if you're in Barrie, my goodness, if you're out of the region, if you're listening online streaming, we'd still love to hear from you at 1-800-639-6391. Thank you.
The Secretary of State is Vermont's top elections officer, ensuring that voters' rights are upheld and elections are run fairly. The office also oversees a number of professions. I'm Bob Kinzel. Join me for a debate among the candidates for Secretary of State. You can ask a question of these candidates. Go to vpr.net for details.
Listen this evening at 7 on VPR, followed by the presidential debate at 9.
You're listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The tradition of foreign students attending U.S. colleges dates back to the early days of our nation, when Princeton became the first American university to accept students from abroad. The second to do so was here in Vermont. Norwich University's first international student was a Cuban who came to the Northfield campus in 1824, 5 years after the military academy was established. Since then, there's been a steady stream of foreign students on the Northfield campus. VPR's Steve Zinn visited with some of the current crop of international students attending Norwich.
The public diplomacy benefits of welcoming foreign students to the U.S. have long been touted. The students get a closer look at who we are as a people and a culture, and they often take away a more favorable impression than they had when they viewed us from a distance.
My name is Anna Popaki. I'm come from Czech Republic. I'm here for a full semester exchange. It's not so much about academics. It's about the cultural exchange, the socializing people, the USA language, everything together.
Popaki is one of 56 international students at Norwich this semester, hailing from 20 countries. She says her parents' generation admired the United States as what she calls a dreamland to emulate and model itself after. As globalization takes hold in the Czech Republic, she says her generation is more wary of the U.S. But her time here has tempered her own preconceptions about what Americans are like.
I found out that they're more open-minded than I thought.
Norwich University's international student advisor Jen Hassenfuss can also tick off a list of benefits for Americans when they're attending class side by side with foreign students.
When you're working next to a student who is really working hard and doing really well and doing it in their second language, then it challenges you.
Hassenfuss says getting to know foreign students also inspires the Americans to study abroad. And while the international students learn about the United States, the Americans learn from them about their home countries.
You know, how many Indians who grew up in Oman are you going to meet in a lifetime?
Hello, everyone. My name is Kedar Rahman, and I was born in the city of Madras, India. And I moved to the Middle Eastern nation of Oman when I was one, and I've lived there all my life.
Kedar Rahman says many of the American students he talks with at Norwich see the Middle East as one big homogeneous part of the world. They're unaware of the political and cultural diversity of the region, and they certainly don't know much about a little country like Oman.
There's freedom of religion. My family is Hindu, and I practice as well. Women had a lot of rights there, and there are even women in parliament.
There's also something to be learned about how the foreign students see the world. Take Jungrung Chen, for example. He's a third-year cadet from the island nation of Taiwan. Taiwan was under Chinese control until 1949, when 2 million Chinese fled the communist takeover of the mainland. 60 years later, China considers Taiwan a renegade province and still part of the government. Taiwan has never formally declared its independence, but it does see itself as a sovereign country. Chen himself feels no cultural connection to China. He says he's not even sure what the Chinese people look like.
I have no idea, like, what they look like. And then I have a friend. He went to China for the summer. He told me that Chinese people, they think Taiwan belongs to China. So it's pretty interesting, you know.
Chen may never find out about China firsthand. When he graduates, he'll serve up to 10 years in the Taiwanese military. And as an officer, he'll be forbidden from visiting the mainland. Norwich trains cadets from 7 countries: Australia, Germany, France, Taiwan, Thailand, Poland, and the Czech Republic. But not all of Norwich's foreign-born cadets are aiming for careers in their nation's military. Luis Galvez is from Guatemala.
My plan for the future is to receive my diploma and then head back to Guatemala and start working.
So you won't go back and be in the military in Guatemala?
I won't. I'm actually against war.
But you're a cadet.
It's just a way of living in a more disciplined, structured way.
Today's group of international students is much more diverse than in the past. Until 1974, all of Norwich's students were male cadets. Then it began accepting women cadets. And 20 years ago, the doors were also open to civilian students. Norwich's Jen Hassenfuss says in the post-9/11 era, many would-be students have problems getting visas to study in the United States. And other countries are filling the void.
Canada is a much more receptive country. The UK and Australia are taking a lot of our, especially undergraduate students, because they have great course offerings, and they just have better visa policies. They're perceived as being more welcoming than the U.S.
Norwich has a program to help each group of incoming international students acclimate to Vermont and learn the basics of daily life here, like opening a bank account or doing their laundry. School officials say most students adjust well. When I asked the international students what they missed most about home, many of them said simply, the food. For VPR News, I'm Steve Zind.
If you're eating local right now, what could be better than fresh cider and apples picked right off the tree? Stop by any farm stand this time of year and you're likely to find the owner out back helping with the harvest and willing to give you a lesson in making use of all those bruised and battered apples by making cider.
I'm Stan Pratt. This is Happy Valley Orchard here in Middlebury, Vermont. My wife Mary and I own it together. We make cider and have a pick-your-own orchard here. It's about 16 acres, and we're open from the middle of August through Thanksgiving, selling all kinds of good apples and good-tasting cider. When I was young in the early 60s, most families in our area, for extra money, would pick apples to pay their taxes. You probably couldn't pick enough apples now to pay your taxes, but in those days you could, and that's how I got interested in it, learned to work in the orchard, prune trees, and just a seasonal thing that was fun to do. It's like maple syrup time in the spring. When you're a farm child, you grow up doing all those different things that are your parents try to tell you is fun, but it's actually hard work. Apple cider is just squeezed apples. We start here with our apples, and we dump them out of these 13 bushel bins. This is called a hopper. Our elevator is going to take the apples headed toward the washer. I love apples, so I have no problem just eating apples every day. I taste them to see how they're coming, and when they're good, they might be a little better next week than they are this week, and I eat dozens every day. But once the season's over, I probably won't eat another apple until next season.
Mikey?
I guess we can go in here now. The brusher washer washes the apples before it gets to the grinder. There's a big 8-inch steel drum in here with sharp blades, and that spins around with this motor and makes a lot of noise, but it grinds the apples up so you can see, just like mush, like applesauce. We're supposed to take the seconds, or the apples that we can't sell, but because we have a few more apples than we really need, we just pick them right off the trees. Max, Empires, Cortland, Spies, Delicious. The more varieties in your cider, usually, the better it tastes. Early in the season, typically, your cider's tart. So some people like early season cider better than the later season, when your apples are more ripe. And then it's pumped from that hose toward the cider press. And that's put between all the cider, the wooden racks there. And once you build it up high enough, you slide it under the press, and it squeezes about 50 gallons, I would estimate, of cider per stack there. A typical day will make 400 gallons here, I would say. And then you have to have a way to get it into the gallon containers or half-gallon containers, however you want to bottle it. And these nozzles are set up here, so you set your jugs underneath, and the cider runs right in. fill them up, put a cap on it, it's all ready for drinking.
You can see pictures of the cider process and find a link to the Happy Valley Orchard at vpr.net. Click on Vermont Edition. That's our show for today. Coming up tomorrow on the program, the Senate Judiciary Committee has been conducting a series of statewide hearings on changes to Vermont's sex offender laws. Senator Dick Sears joins us to talk about the feedback his committee has received so far. That's tomorrow at noon. And don't forget to tune in tonight at 7 as Bob Kinzel moderates a live debate among the candidates for Secretary of State. I'm Jane Lindholm. I hope you have a great afternoon.
Vermont Public Radio's membership drive. We're taking just a brief moment at the end of today's Vermont edition. I'm Mark Vogelsang, President, General Manager, along with our Chief Financial Officer, Brian Donahue. Brian, another great program and another good reason to pledge.
It is. These programs, it's Vermont Edition has become the convener of issues and topics and newsmakers with the great component of that access that we have from the call.
Thanks for listening. We welcome feedback and suggestions for Vermont Edition. Contact us anytime at vpr.net.